Before we get to the local news roundup, a quick reminder that listener support is the main source of funding for the news and information you rely on. You can give by hitting the donate button on the WFAE app and at WFAE.org. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, the coronavirus is now beginning to impact everyday life, as officials warned it would. As of this moment, 9:06:49 on Friday morning, Mecklenburg County is reporting two cases, one in Cabarrus, with a total of 15 in North Carolina. Those numbers are subject to change at a moment's notice. The stock market reacts with a frightening correction. The University of North Carolina switches to online-only classes, and the governor declares a state of emergency. Our roundtable of reporters is ready to detail those and other stories, and seated around this table are Ann Doss Helms from WFAE News. Welcome to you.
Good morning.
Glenn Berkins is here. He's editor and publisher of QCityMetro.com. Hi.
Good morning.
Joe Bruno is a reporter for WSSC-TV Channel 9 Eyewitness News. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Mary C. Curtis. You can tell he's from television. He's wearing a tie. And Mary C. Curtis is a columnist for Roll Call and contributor to WCCB-TV News. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Plus, because of health concerns dominating this hour, we have asked WFAE's novel healthcare reporter, because she's new to the roundup, Claire Donnelly, to be with us. And we have isolated her, because she deals with health issues, away from the table. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. Let's start in Mecklenburg County, Claire. Yesterday, the number kept changing all day yesterday.
Right.
As it will across the country. So there are two in Mecklenburg, one in Cabarrus, 15 total in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. What do we know about the three people in our area?
Right. So what we know is very little. We know that one of the people one of the two Mecklenburg County people does not actually live in Mecklenburg County. We know one is a resident of Mecklenburg County. We know that they right now are in isolation. County Public Health Director Gibby Harris says that they are working to determine whether these were connected to travel. It seems like right now one may have been connected to travel within the U.S. and one may have been connected to international travel, but they're still kind of working all that out.
And why does the one who presented in Mecklenburg County but doesn't live here, why did they present here?
They were tested here.
Why?
So, I mean, I assume that they were traveling through here. I don't actually know that, but yeah.
So in announcing these, I get the numbers wrong, the two Mecklenburg cases, Gibby Harris, who is our county public health director, said we are now in a situation where we could potentially have community spread. Explain that. What does that mean?
Yeah, so community spread basically means that we could start to see cases. That's a public health term, mm-hmm. and it means that we could start to see cases that we don't know how they happened. So it's pretty easy to trace a lot of times with travel, like this person got it from this person, who got it from this person, who got it from this person. But with public spread, with community spread, you don't always know where it came from. You can start to have cases kind of pop up independently.
What about the person in Cabarrus who has this?
That information just came out like late last night. I know very little about that. I think public health officials know very little about that. So we're
I've been doing this a long time, and I yesterday afternoon in trying to put this together, things were changing so fast. Literally, you could not type a story or a number but without it changing immediately. Joe?
That Cabarrus information did come out late. They do believe, though, it is a travel-related case that wasn't a community spread one. Okay. And Cox Mill Elementary notified parents late last night that a child was exposed to this COVID-19 patient, and that child and their family are now in quarantine because of it.
So these cases in Mecklenburg, they are not in quarantine, but they are what?
Isolation.
That mean?
Right. So isolation is if you have a confirmed or a presumptive positive, you are asked to self-isolate, which means stay in your house, don't leave. And the CDC has guidelines.
About the rest of your family.
Right. Yeah. The CDC has guidelines for people who live in homes with people who have tested presumptively positive. Mm-hmm. They recommend that you stay in one room in your house. You try to use a separate bathroom. sleep alone if possible, really just try to minimize contact with other members of your household.
So there's, I think there's an individual, Joe, at Wells Fargo who presented evidently with this, a Wells Fargo employee that you tweeted about. You said, Wells Fargo says an employee who works on the sixth floor at one Wells Fargo in Charlotte has been in prolonged close contact with an individual who was tested positive for COVID-19, that's the virus. Where is that employee, and are they counted among the two in Mecklenburg County that they reported yesterday?
So we don't know what case of COVID-19 this employee is tied to, but that employee is at home right now in self-isolation, quarantine, whatever you want to call it. And there were all these pictures circulating on the internet of people in full body gear entering Wells Fargo.
Really?
Because they had to clean extensively the sixth floor. Out of an abundance of caution, Wells Fargo says they have asked all employees of that sixth floor to work from home for the time being.
Okay. And do we know if they were exposed, any of those people?
We know that the employee had direct contact, right. But and then we're getting into having contact with a contact person. I think that, you know, we're going to need more information about, like, how this can be transmitted. Exactly. Like, if we know someone who knows someone that has coronavirus, should we freak out? But I think a lot of companies are going to take that extra step now. So even if there is that 2 degrees of separation, you're going to see these extensive cleanings rolling.
So if you get this virus and you're confined to your home, given how easily this allegedly spreads, and it seems to be easily spread, more than the flu, what do you do? I mean, one would think the entire house will get this. They will all be certainly exposed to it, and most of them will come down with it. Are there any recommendations on how we, who don't yet have it, should prepare for that eventuality?
I think that's why we're seeing a lot of people rushing to Target and Walmart and buying up all the toilet paper and bottled water, because honestly, they're preparing, if they have to quarantine for 14 days, that they're going to need supplies, especially if they have a family of 4 or 5. That's why you see all these empty shelves of Lysol wipes and paper towels and toilet paper. And a lot of people are joking, saying like, oh, what are you going to do with all that toilet paper?
Well,
I think it's a legitimate concern, though, if you're worried about your whole family having to stay in the home for 14
and
days.
And I read this morning, in the Observer, there was an article about getting ready for this, and one thing said, go out and get a 2-week supply of food.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of food? Are you gonna, you're not going to be standing, you're not going to be frying chicken if you're sick.
Beans and rice.
All right.
But isn't the problem, too, that we just don't have enough tests here, so there's that amount of uncertainty?
We don't have any tests. We'll talk about that in a second. Dr. Mandy Cohen, Secretary of the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services, believe this virus is, quote, moving exceptionally quickly, which is why we need to move exceptionally quickly as well. Does that explain how this state went from a low-risk area 20 minutes ago, it seems, to a place where a state of emergency has been declared and everything is closing?
I think so. One thing that we should clarify is that a state of emergency doesn't necessarily mean, oh, we have, you know, X number of cases. There's not kind of a threshold.
It's a way to get federal money.
It's a way to get federal money, right. So I think also a lot of people are just taking precautions ahead of time, because part of what has come out from other states and from other countries is that if you don't proactively prevent the spread of it, it will move like wildfire. Like Italy definitely all of a sudden is on complete lockdown because they didn't prepare enough ahead of time. It was spreading and nobody knew it was spreading.
So we have 15 cases at last report. South Carolina, as of yesterday afternoon, was reporting 10 cases of coronavirus. And Governor Henry McMaster down there was urging the General Assembly to dedicate the surplus funds of about $45 million to the state's COVID-19 response. And yesterday, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham announced that he is self-quarantining and awaiting the results of a coronavirus test in an abundance of caution and upon the advice of his doctor, because he was in Mar-a-Lago last weekend, as was the president, as was the president of Brazil, and the president of Brazil's spokesperson, who has now tested positive. So all those people have been exposed. Graham says he doesn't recall any direct contact with Brazil's president. But there are photographs of our president with Brazil's president and with Brazil's president's spokesperson. And yet the president has not been tested. Why?
Well, he says he feels great. It's interesting because President Trump, Donald Trump, is a renowned germaphobe.
And Ivanka was next to somebody who
has. And apparently he has wipes and cleaning supplies everywhere, mm-hmm. and he doesn't like to shake hands. And I think you would think he would just get the test.
I mean, Justin Trudeau's wife has tested positive, and both of them are self-isolating. Isn't it dangerous for the president not to self-isolate for everybody else in the White House, including the person who would take over, the vice president?
Well, the other thing we have to consider here, and it's unfortunate, but there have been so many untruths in this administration that we really don't know what's what. Just because
pictures don't lie.
Well, no. I mean about not being tested.
Okay.
I would think if I were the president's physician, mm-hmm. he wouldn't have a choice. I would think if I were chief of staff, I would say, Mr. President, you're going to be tested. So
maybe
but
you haven't
really
read,
don't
maybe you
know
haven't read the papers.
On.
The president doesn't do what he's told.
In theory, but this is different.
It also begs the question that obviously some of these people, like Lindsey Graham and so forth, can get these tests fairly quickly.
Yes, how about that?
And other folks cannot. Who might have even greater symptoms. So that's another question, who's getting these tests? And also, I mean, this is the thing. When you have one country, like a South Korea or Italy, they can do these things. America, you know, our federal response has been so confused. So it's up to 50, it's governors, it's state officials, it's local officials. And so it's been a very confusing response, which also leads to a little bit of panic because folks can't really go to one source and say, this is happening. Particularly, as you say, when even in one press conference, the president is contradicting himself, Dr. Anthony Fauci from this, you know, has the medical response, the vice president. So this is a time where you don't really, as Glenn said, you're not even sure of who can give you the real story.
Florida Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz was on Air Force One with the president not too long ago. He was exposed to the virus. I don't know if he's been tested, and I don't know if he's in isolation, but what do we know about that? Anything?
He is in isolation, yes.
And I believe self-isolation?
Yes, self-isolation. I believe he was exposed at CPAC.
Okay, yes. But he was on Air Force One
Correct.
With the president.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. The county is not recommending school closings, nor is the state school superintendent, Mark Johnson.
Right now, we're keeping public schools open, and that is at the guidance of our health professionals. Unlike the university system, we do have a public school system that is made up of 115 individual districts. So we have been prioritizing for local superintendents to work with their local health officials. And ultimately, the decision for each local community will come down to the local health official and the local superintendent with the guidance that we are working on from the state.
So prior to making that statement, he pointed out that this is a difficult decision and it makes people unhappy no matter which decision you make, because if you say the schools are going to stay open, well-to-do parents who can afford hot lunches and things like that and can afford daycare, et cetera, will say, well, that's God, I don't want my kid in that environment. And less affluent parents who need those lunches and those breakfasts that are served to less affluent children and don't have money for daycare, they get upset if you keep the schools open. What have you heard from parents? And we only have 40 seconds. What have you heard from parents here about schools?
I'm actually not hearing at this point a huge demand to close, but things are just changing so fast. I believe after Mark Johnson made that statement, Durham, Chapel Hill, and Orange County school districts closed. And we'll probably loop back to CMS to talk a little more after the break. But I'm hearing teachers who are concerned because they're saying there's all this talk about cleanliness, but we don't have enough custodial staff to do a thorough deep clean on my classroom. And so I'm in there with my little wipes, if I can find them, trying to swab down my class.
That's Ann Doss Helms, our education reporter. We will come back to schools. We will talk about CMS. We will talk about private schools and more about this coronavirus at large when we come back. It's the weekly news roundup on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's the local news roundup. We're talking a lot this morning about the coronavirus, which has now made its presence known not only in the state of North Carolina, but here in Charlotte, with two cases here, one at last report at least, in Cabarrus County. We're here with Ann Doss Helms, our education reporter, Jill Bruno from Channel 9, WSSC-TV, Mary C. Curtis, columnist for
Roll Call,
thank you. And also contributed to WCCB-TV, Glenn Birkins, founder, publisher, QCityMetro.com. And because of the virus, we have our healthcare reporter, Claire Donnelly, with us here as well. Going back to schools, schools are going to be, Mark Johnson said, he's the state superintendent, said that it will be up to individual school systems as to what they do. The state's not going to make a blanket statement about staying open or staying closed. And CMS Superintendent Ernest Winston says his message to families is, quote, continue to take precautionary steps. If a child or an adult is sick, we strongly encourage that they stay at home. So when and if CMS or other school districts around the area decide to close, what criteria will they use? Have they told us that?
They have not given a whole lot of details, and I have been assured that they are planning. They're trying to figure out all the logistics, like how you would feed the kids who rely on CMS for meals and things like that. Of course, since you did the show last week, we've seen CMS go from no restrictions to cutting off basically everything except school, you know, sports, activities, field trips. I was frantically making calls as I came in to say what's happening today. Got somebody in central staff who said, all I can say is as of 8:35 a.m., there's no decision to close. But then got somebody else very close to the decision-making who said, I'll be surprised if that's still the case by the
so
end of the day.
They've canceled field trips, and I'm just wondering how taking a class field trip is any different from showing up to a school.
Well,
and if Children's Theater, which is right down the street, is planning to stay open and do their shows, their daytime shows are populated by field trips. That's how it happens.
Yeah, and you could argue for any given field trip, but it is one more place where you're getting out and mingling with more people, and they are discouraging large gatherings, and there's always a chance that you travel. Basically, they've kept reacting, as everybody has, to try to figure out how do you take reasonable precautions without essentially the nuclear option, which is send everybody home, which is you then have 19,000 employees. Some of them are salaried and would still be getting paid. Some are hourly and really rely on those wages and would not be getting paid. So it's going to be a big deal if and when they close. But again, I just think, you know, we are seeing more and more states. I was listening on the way in, and they were saying five states, and it was like three as of last night, that where they have across the board said, those governors have said, everybody, charter, district, private, you're closing.
And it's also worth noting that, like, other school systems in North Carolina have also been closed. I mean, Durham is closing.
Durham, Orange County,
but they're kind of the epicenter.
They're also about a week ahead of us on this cycle.
Exactly.
So it's interesting, too, though, children are not as affected, they say, by this particular virus, but they can be carriers, and they can go home and affect their parents, their grandparents.
I'm interested in something you said just before the break that might have slipped past a lot of people. The teachers were concerned because they're bringing handy wipes and things like that, but they don't have enough custodial personnel in the schools to properly clean the schools. What's up with that?
Well, I think they have enough to properly clean under normal circumstances, but this feeling that you're somehow getting this extreme deep cleaning of every class, every laptop that the kids use because they all have these devices that they use, every desk, every seat, you know, that they're feeling like the assurances that are being given out are perhaps greater than the reality. And I'm sure it varies from class to class and from school to school.
And in the break, Mary, you said what this is doing, and I think you're absolutely right about this, is showing the weaknesses, the cracks in the crevices in the gigantic canyons in our system.
All of our
at governmental
systems.
Levels.
Yes, our healthcare system, people are wondering, you know, we don't have, I mean, Bernie Sanders is making speeches saying, you see, we do need Medicare for all because so many people aren't insured. And at one press conference, I heard someone say, will people who aren't insured be able to get this for free? And you heard Congresswoman Katie Porter try to push the folks from the CDC will be able to get it for free. So you have our healthcare system. Then you have our employment system where so many people don't have paid sick leave. So they cannot just stay home. I just got a Lyft driver from the airport. I mean, that's all he does. And what could he do? So we have that. We have our economic system. And as Ann was saying, even in education, you have the fact that so many of these kids, this is where they get a lot of their meals. And childcare is so expensive, the parents have to send the kids to school. So you see everywhere down the line, we have so many folks and politicians who run on the idea that government is bad and we have to shrink government. Well, now you see all the role that government can play. And when you don't have these systems and safety nets in place and something like this happens, it all crumbles.
Well, let me ask you this, because what we're looking at is these cracks that are developing in an overly stressed system in an extraordinary situation, which nobody anticipated and comes along, one hopes, once in a lifetime and once in 100 years, like the 1918 flu epidemic. Can you structure, is it affordable to structure government and all of the systems that we depend on to run Western civilizations for an eventual, a 24/7 readiness for an eventuality like this? And if it is this going to become, as this gets worse, a political turning point?
Well, it already is, and you see where political leadership has a lot to do with it. I don't know if you realize that. President Obama, when he had faced systems with the Ebola and the H1N1, had put into place a global health unit in the National Security Council. And one of the first things President Trump did was disband it. Now, this was because this was to prepare if something happened, and they basically said, we don't need this. Well, of course you do. And when you try to ramp it up at the last minute, then you see the system happened. So, yes, you see where leadership happens. And this particular, I think you do, it's interesting because President Trump was seen to be, you know, very strong, but this is the kind of crisis that plays into all of his weaknesses, the fact that he's, you know, retreated from international alliances, where this is something where you need a global response, the fact that there's doubts about science, and this is when you are looking to the scientists and medical personnel, when you see that you need a consoler-in-chief, someone that's going to be calm but transparent and truthful, and that's not really his strong point. So this is definitely going to have political implications, particularly if it ramps up and gets worse.
Glenn.
Mike, I think you raised a good point. This is really extraordinary, and I think that point needs to be understood. Yes, we can do better. Yes, there are things that we can do to bring to cover more people with health care, universal sick leave, things like that. But it's really hard to defend against such a shock to the economy, to the nation.
Yeah, but 2 weeks ago, all these closings would have been unimaginable.
Unimaginable. This is, people have compared this to 9/11 when all travel, all airline travel stopped. But this is actually worse. This is probably unprecedented in our lifetimes to see this many things just grind to a halt.
Right. Getting back to schools, the University of North Carolina system is extending spring break until March 22nd, and on March 23rd, when classes resume, they will resume online only. What have they said about people who take lab classes? You have to be in a lab. If you're an actor, you have to be in an acting class. If you're a musician and you're in the orchestra, you got to be there to play. What have they said about things like that? Did they get an incomplete? Did they get the letter grade they have now? How does that work? Have they said? Joe?
Yes, UNC Charlotte has said things like labs that require in-person instruction will continue. They are delaying that, though, to give teachers a chance to figure out how that will be. What's really interesting between all the different university systems is like the different responses. So UNC Charlotte, they're transitioning to online only with the exception of labs and other courses that require in-person, but they're keeping the campus open. They're letting students stay in their dorms. They're telling people to social distance. Dining halls are open. Queens University down the street, they're telling students they have to get out by Sunday. So
that's news to me. I didn't know.
Different
that.
Responses. Universities are handling this differently.
What does Central Piedmont say?
Central Piedmont right now is on spring break. They haven't made any decisions about their classes yet.
What about Johnson C. Smith?
Johnson C. Smith, at last check, was deep cleaning the university, and it is my understanding they have not made a decision on whether to transition to online coursework yet either.
I believe Davidson is also asking students
online,
to.
Yeah.
And we talk about elementary and high school students, but you know, some college students are food insecure and have problems as well. And they have a problem if they're just told to get out. We have homeless college students, you know, so that's a problem for them as well.
This online or distance learning is really a part of the equation, too, when we talk about K-12 education, because there is so much that's digital now, and kids have tablets often provided by the schools. But again, this is going to, closing is going to widen the equity gaps, because, as you mentioned, you're going to have kids who go home, and there's a parent at home to supervise them, and there's a hot meal, and there's a laptop, and there's a good Wi-Fi connection. And you're going to have kids who go home, and even if they bring their device home,
they don't have Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
They don't have internet.
No broadband.
And you then run into these state requirements that there's going to be some pretty strict requirements about what counts as a school day. If you say, we're just closed and we're going home, we're not going to have enough hours for kids to graduate. And if you say, we're doing this as distance learning, you have to really clear a lot of hurdles to show that you can make this work for everybody, including kids with disabilities, which can mean sending a tutor to their homes.
And aren't there like thousands of kids in our system that are like living in motels and homeless and shelters? Yeah.
Joe.
Just a quick note on Queens. While they're telling all the students they have to leave, if they can't, they can apply for a waiver so they can stay on campus. But like UNC Charlotte, if you're on campus now, it's going to be completely different.
I think it's arguable. I think this is true. I think you can trace the cancellation of the ACC tournament to Duke University because they closed all of their athletic programs and refused to participate. What is Duke doing? Are they keeping their schools open? Are they doing online classes? What are they doing?
I believe they are transitioning to online. I'm not sure what their on-campus living situation is.
This is about social distancing, which is a new term none of us knew a week ago, which appears to be one of the things that has worked in other parts of the world. Keep people apart, and they can't spread the virus. That seems to work?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is something that public health officials nationally and in our local area are recommending.
Because all of these efforts, there was a curve, there was a graph that came out, I think it was yesterday, that showed if we don't do any of these things, if we just go on with life as normal, the curve of the number of cases is going to spike like a Christmas tree, like a very tall Christmas tree. And there's a certain line about a third of the way up the Christmas tree, which is the capacity of hospitals to handle these cases. Yeah. So two-thirds will not be able to be handled. So what they're trying to do through all these measures, social distancing and closing schools, et cetera, is to make it a short, stubby Christmas tree, but a long, wide one so that the hospitals can handle it.
If you think about it from a spread standpoint, if you are in isolation, you have already reduced the number of people that you're exposed to, right? So you can potentially spread it to, you know, your four family members, your two family,
So we have a Twitter comment. The schools need to close before there are documented cases. There is no way it's not already in the schools. Do we agree with that?
It seems likely. When you consider in CMS alone, almost 150,000 with the pre-kindergartners, 19,000 employees, then you add charters and privates and surrounding areas, it seems likely. And that's the epidemiologists all say, yes, it is smart to close before it gets there. The CMS stance, to the extent that they've given any details, has been, we stay open until we have a confirmed case. I just think that's probably going to evolve.
Joe.
And it all goes back to that need to flatten the curve. We know that a whole lot of people are going to get this virus. Now we just need to kind of spread out those cases.
They canceled Broadway.
I know. Christopher, who can afford it anyway?
I know.
Christopher on Facebook, this whole situation makes much more clear our need for redundancy in our social support system for issues including healthcare, technology, food security, and other universal human needs. And we have a Wall Street update coming our way. At the opening bell, the Dow jumped more than 1,200 points. That means it's up, or more than 5% as stocks try to rebound from the worst day since Black Monday in 1987, which was yesterday. Earlier this week, Governor Cooper got folks' attention here by shifting the state's posture toward this coronavirus by declaring a state of emergency. And then he said something that other officials in states across the country have been saying with increasing frequency.
I think one thing that is clear is all of our lives are going to change in some way in response to this virus.
So this the president has been saying that the testing is going well and that if you want a test, you can get a test. But that is simply not true. It is a lie. The governor is also not alone among state governors when he said that this state has not yet received all of the coronavirus testing supplies it needs from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Why not?
There's a back log right Why? Now with the CDC. So
it's
an
the United
issue.
States. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. We're the greatest country in the world. We have the best medical system in the world. Why don't we have these tests when everybody else in the world has them?
The problem is there's a lack of supplies used to extract that genetic material that
Why?
Is used to diagnose COVID-19.
Why?
Didn't we refuse some?
Yes, we did.
Yes, from the WHO.
Well, this means that the outbreak could be worse than we think here and around the country because we aren't testing for it. And here's what Mecklenburg County Health Director Gibby Harris told us on Charlotte Talks earlier this week.
Right now, we're having to blanket things because we don't know what's going on. So, you know, canceling big events, closing schools, things like that, some of that is reaction to the fact that we really don't have the good data that we normally have to help us address these types of infections.
Meanwhile, North Carolina State Health Director Dr. Elizabeth Tilson told the Raleigh News and Observer that she would like to do more testing.
We do want to do more testing. We think there may be people that we haven't tested that should have tested right now. Because of the limits in our supply, we're trying to prioritize the testing for those people who might be at the highest risk. But we want to do more testing, and we want to be able to have the supplies so that we can do more testing.
Is the federal government still insisting that you can get a test if you want a test? Unless you're Lindsey Graham, who got a test? I mean, seriously, are they still saying that?
I don't know if they're still saying it, but it's just clearly not the case. I mean, if you go into a doctor's office with a sniffle and an earache and you say, I want to be tested for coronavirus, they're going to laugh you out of the building.
So I even heard a doctor say that she had a patient and she wanted to test this patient and could not get this patient a test.
We got 10.4 million people in North Carolina, and the state lab has 700 tests. I know that the state lab isn't the only place you can get tested for coronavirus, but 700 to 10.4.
So these mixed messages and things that are provably, demonstrably untrue, how is that affecting the stock market and business and policymakers and decision makers at the business level and your 401k? How is that being impacted by all this, this demonstrably untrue statements?
Well, the stock market does not like surprises at all. Anything that comes out of the blue that's unexpected is going to affect the stock market. And not to beat up on the president, but when he went on the air, made the address from the Oval Office, there were some things that he said that immediately sent the futures market into a tailspin. And the next morning, the stock market followed.
Yeah.
And we saw this absolutely horrible day drubbing that the stock market took.
And we're going to talk more about the market, even though it's up 1,200 points this morning. That's some good news. We'll talk about that and closures and what this is doing to life as we know it in the United States when we come back at Charlotte Talks. At Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE, I'm Mike Collins. It's the local news roundup, all corona all the time. Mary C. Curtis is here from Roll Call and WCCB-TV. Glenn Birkins from QCityMetro.com. Joe Bruno, reporter for WSOC-TV News, Eyewitness News, and Ann Doss-Helms, our education reporter, and Claire Donnelly, our health reporter from WFAE, are here. We're talking about corona and all the things it's doing to our society, and we're planning to devote an hour on Monday to answering your questions about the coronavirus outbreak. What do you want to know about coronavirus? COVID-19 is its official name. How is this affecting your daily life? You can send your questions for health experts to us right now at charlottetalks@wfae.org or wfae.org/charlottetalks. And I believe it is our intention to open the phones on Monday and let you call in with questions as well. So let's talk some more about this. The fact that we don't know true counts, we don't know how many people actually have it because we're not testing to any great degree in this country. This uncertainty that we don't know and all the other unknowns that no one can know, including scientists, like how it spread, how fast it spread, how long it stays on surfaces, etc. Has that led to an overabundance of caution and to all the cancellations that just poured in like there was like the Titanic sinking yesterday, where all these sports leagues canceled everything?
Well, I think one of the ironies of this approach is that the better it works, the more it will seem like an overreaction. You know, if we don't all get sick, we'll all kind of all be saying, or if we get sick, you know, 3 weeks from now, which I think that when you talk about flattening the curve, that's something to think about, that it's not like we can all huddle for a week and then we'll be safe. we're talking about something that we're going to have to keep doing for a very long time, potentially.
And we don't know how long.
Right.
Because yesterday, the NCAA announced that it would play their tournaments around the country, but nobody would be in the stands. And then they canceled March Madness altogether. The NBA quickly suspended its entire season until further notice, as did the NHL. Major League Baseball has suspended operations through spring training. Plus, after starting the ACC tournament, they stopped it yesterday and awarded the trophy to Florida State. And that's not all. The Southeastern Conference, the Big Ten Conference, the Pac-12 Conference, the Big East all canceled their championship tournaments. Broadway shut every theater in New York for a month. How is that going to impact the economy and the bookies? Not to mention the bookies. How is that going to impact the economy?
It's not going to be good.
Now, that's an understatement.
On Wednesday.
You're Captain Obvious.
Yes.
Yeah, really. On Wednesday, Wells Fargo's acting chief economist, Jay Bryson, put out a report saying that that Wells Fargo anticipated a mild economic contraction in the second quarter, followed by renewed economic growth. The very next day, they had to change that. They had to update that forecast. Now they're predicting a more prolonged downturn and a more severe downturn.
Yeah. And somebody on, I think it was CNBC the other day, said that we are already in a recession. We just don't know it yet, but we're here. But the question is, this is not a money problem. This is not a structural problem in the stock market or in the economy. This is a medical problem that is affecting everything around it. So once the medical problem goes away, does everything just go back to where it was? Does it rebound?
Not quickly, no. Unlike the stock market, we had a very horrible day yesterday, and then today we saw, as you pointed out so far, there's been a rebound.
It's because people are buying.
Right,
it's
because people are
right
buying. Absolutely. There are cheap stocks out there. Unlike that, it's a little harder to jumpstart the economy once it has slipped into recession. Employers just don't lay off people and then bring them back willy-nilly. It takes a while for that to work its way through the system. How long that might take isn't really anyone's guess.
And this, when we say economy, we're talking in the abstract. This really impacts actual human beings who have to go to work or can't go to work because their job's been canceled or they've been told we don't need you right now, like restaurants and bars. If no one's going, they're not going to be any waiters or waitresses being paid because we don't need you.
Excellent point. Two-thirds of the economy is driven by consumer spending.
Right.
So when you have people who are out of work, or for that matter, just insecure about the future, they tend to cut back on spending. They don't spend this much. We're seeing that they're not going to be going to Broadway. We see that they're not going to be going to the bar crawl this weekend. And so when consumer spending contracts, a broader downturn in the economy can't be far behind.
Yeah. Here's one real-world example. The Hyatt House in Uptown, the huge hotel right next to the Spectrum Center. They've already lost $250,000 in canceled reservations, so now they're looking at either shutting down floors, turning off power, or cutting employee hours. Those figures were as of Wednesday, before all of the shows and all of the NBA games and a whole lot more events were canceled.
The governor of New York State canceled New York City's St. Patrick's Day parade, which attracts 2 million people and I think has 250,000 people in the parade. Who knew it was that big? And locally, the 2020 Shamrock Crawl in Matthews has been postponed. I never heard of this. Rich and Bennett's 20th annual St. Patrick's
Day
pub crawl has been, I'm not a big drinker, has been rescheduled for June 27th. I think we canceled our St. Patrick's Day parade over the weekend.
Boston, I mean, come on, they canceled theirs.
Sunday's Charlotte Checker post-game skate with players events has been canceled. The games will go on. Michael Bublé's upcoming concert at Spectrum Arena has been canceled. What other events have been impacted by this?
I heard of the first local church that has canceled worship service until further notice.
And all the folks who deal in the tourist industry all over the country, I mean, they are being slammed. I've just had, I travel with my work, with my lectures and so forth, three conferences in Washington, D.C., San Diego, and Boston canceled. Look at all those folks in the airlines, in the hotels, all of these things.
So we've gone from, in a matter of hours, literally yesterday, it was a matter of hours, we went to life as we know it to complete disruption of everything. Is this the end of this, or is this just the beginning of this?
Well, I think this.
And I think people wish that they knew the answer to that question.
The scary thing is we don't know.
Yeah.
And I think the uncertainty is a part of it as well, that we have a problem with that. And you see, even they talk about unity, but politically, even the parties can't come together. First of all, they were going to go on a recess, Congress, but they canceled that. I think that was, people were fairly outraged. But you see conservatives looking toward tax cuts. Subsidies for industries like the hotels and cruise lines and airlines. And then you see Democrats more looking toward paid sick leave, subsidies for folks who are food insecure. So they're trying now to come together on this. And I heard during the negotiations that the president is so still upset with Nancy Pelosi that he won't meet face-to-face with the speaker. So they're doing this. So we are also playing politics during all of this. And this is the backdrop of an election year. So you have folks, will we cancel the rallies? Won't we cancel the rallies? And you have the different candidates. You saw Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders come out with their plan saying, this is what I would do if I were president.
And one thing backfired this week, and maybe the markets overreacted, I don't know, and maybe they did, maybe this wasn't a reaction, but earlier this week, and I've forgotten which night it is because everything goes so at the speed of sound now, or the speed of light, the president made a rare address from the Oval Office.
Did not go well.
Presidents don't do that unless they have something really important to say. At least that's been the tradition. And that caused the market, because of some of the things he said, like we're going to have a travel ban and nobody could come here and no cargo could come here from Europe, turned out not to be true. Mm-hmm. It surprised everybody in Europe, all of our allies in Europe, and it certainly is not true. And he made three mistakes, let's be kind, in that speech. I'd like to know how the hell that happens. Mm-hmm. It's on the teleprompter. Somebody wrote the speech. He probably didn't, but because presidents don't. But how does that happen? How do you make three policy errors in a televised address? How?
Well, I just think that looks, that's evidence of the confusion of leadership at the top, and it makes the stock market and citizens more insecure about
what's
going on.
How do you make that mistake when you look around?
I don't work for the administration.
But your entire yes. presidency is predicated on the economy.
Yes.
How do you make a mistake that causes the economy to shudder? How do you do that? Who's in charge?
You fire a whole lot of people who used to be in charge and who used to be the adults in the room. And
in a different life, I was a White House reporter under the Clinton administration. I was, and ordinarily these things are very disciplined. Administrations are very disciplined. It might look as if the president just kind of walks out and makes a statement or whatever, but that's not how it typically happens. Typically, these speeches are vetted, they're fact-checked. We know that this administration does not adhere to the same level of discipline that some of the other administrations have followed. And I suspect, though I don't have any firsthand knowledge, that is what happened here.
And also the thing, as Ann pointed out, right now the main criteria for working in the White House is loyalty. He values that more than anything, the president. So a lot of the experts have actually been ushered out or reassigned, and the people closest to him are those who are most loyal. That doesn't mean that they are most efficient at doing, as Glenn said, the business of government. And having the norms that right now people are craving, I think, normalcy more than anything else.
So interestingly enough, as we talk about this virus spreading and closing everything and the stock market crashing, USA Today conducted an exclusive poll which revealed that Americans are more worried about their finances in the face of this virus than their health. Claire, all these steps, being taken may seem like overkill to a lot because they've come on so swiftly. I mean, literally, I cannot tell you, you know this because you were reporting yesterday,
right.
But the breathtaking speed at which all of this changed yesterday,
right, yeah.
I'm not kidding when I say you couldn't type fast enough to keep up with it. So is there an easy way to explain this? Is this an overabundance of caution that we're going to regret having gone through? What if this turns out to be unnecessary, all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that everybody wishes they knew whether this was too much or too little, or, you know, if down the road we're going to regret having cut all of this off early. I think, though, at least what I've been hearing from public health experts, Gibby Harris included, is that an overabundance of caution when health is at stake is what public health officials feel like is a good choice. I mean, limiting possible spread, limiting the number of people you're exposed to. I mean, that's all you
can
do.
And I think
really
we can look at Italy and see what happens if you don't take some of these precautions.
Exactly.
It's not a good picture.
There was a Twitter shot yesterday that was making the rounds of somebody who was in a Target in the Northeast. And they had gone to get some baby wipes and some formula for their child, and they were in the aisle, and they took a photograph of a completely empty aisle of shelves. There wasn't a darn thing on the shelves. It looked like an unopened store. How concerned should we be? I mean, we talked about the run on toilet paper and other things, bottled water. How concerned should we be about food? If you're supposed to have a two-week supply of food, nobody buys a two-week supply of food. So if everybody goes out and buys a two-week supply of food, will there be any food on the shelves?
I mean, I don't know.
Okay, I'm asking hypothetical questions.
Maybe we'll empty out our freezers, stuff we never eat.
You can say that we're...
That's right.
Yeah, all those cans of sardines, right? But you can say that we're overreacting, but even if we keep the number of the fatalities and the people affected low,
right.
If that were your grandparent or family member,
right.
I mean, this is serious.
It's devastating.
And we haven't talked about the nursing homes and retirement centers, but my mom is in assisted living. They went to restricted visits, I think, Wednesday night, and to lockdown last night. There are no visitors coming in and out. So,
are hospitals allowing patient visits?
Very restricted.
And that's something, too, in American society, they were saying in places like South Korea and so forth, where older people stay in the family and you keep them at home,
right.
It's a lot easier. Now these nursing homes have been, you know, incubation.
So we have 2.5 minutes left, and there was other news this week. I know it's hard to believe, but Eastland Mall was supposed to have a public meeting yesterday on the rezoning, and they canceled it. Why, Joe?
Well, they canceled it because of COVID-19, other issues that are going on in the city. Plus, I think there's a reasonable question to ask about whether even Charlotte City Council or Mecklenburg County Commission meetings will happen.
Meanwhile, the city had been working really closely with the contractor on the CityLink's Gold Line Phase 2 streetcar project, which includes that ill-fated bridge on Hawthorne Lane that crosses Independence Boulevard. People living in that area have been mightily inconvenienced for months, and officials were hoping to have it finished by April. It is not going to happen. In a statement put out yesterday by the city, they say it has become evident that the contractor will not complete the work remaining with this scheduled time frame. The new time frame for bridge completion is late July, early August. Would that be this year or next?
Good question. I don't think there's a story that gives me more agita than the Hawthorne Lane Bridge. But they're blaming this on the contractor's inability to acquire materials needed for industry standard field adjustments to the girders, the contractor's inability to maintain work schedules that they submit, and lane closure restrictions on 74th. The one good thing about all of this is now the city can, if they wish, start fining this contractor for not delivering
it
on time.
What does that mean they can't get supplies?
Coronavirus.
No, that's a good question because we've known about this bridge and all of its issues for a year now, the girder issues.
This streetcar project is like building, I don't know, the Great Wall of China. It's going that slowly.
Right.
What is so difficult? Because it's not just the bridge. The bridge is hard because they made a really big mistake with the bridge, with the girders not being the right girders. But why is it taking so long up around Johnson City?
I don't know. On the other, I was going to say, on the other end of that project is the Bates Ford Road area, right in front of Johnson C. Smith, going back into uptown, and much of that has been shut down to traffic for Months and months and months.
10 seconds.
Real quick, it's just frustrating they tried to sneak this by during Governor Cooper's press conference in the middle of a pandemic. Okay. But we're getting the word out.
We got the word out. All right, frustration is abounding here. Claire Donnelly joins us, our health reporter from WFAE, along with Ann Doss Helms, our education reporter. Glenn Berkins, QCityMetro.com. Joe Bruno from WSSC-TV, Channel 9, Eyewitness News. And Mary C. Curtis from WCCB and Roll Call. Thank you all for the hour. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.